10. New Devonian. Milgrim was dreaming of the flagellant Messiah, of the pseudo-Baldwin and the Master of Hungary, when Brown reached down into the hot shallows of his sleep, dug his thumbs into his shoulders, and shook him hard. "What is this?" Brown kept asking, a question Milgrim had taken to be purely existential, until Brown had wedged those same thumbs into the junctures of Milgrim's jaw and skull, hard, producing a degree of discomfort so severe that Milgrim was initially unable to recognise it as pain. Milgrim seemed to levitate through no will of his own, mouth opening to scream, but Brown, green-gloved as ever for these more intimate moments, clapped a hand over it. He smelled the fresh latex covering Brown's index finger. The other hand presented the screen of a BlackBerry. "What is this?" A personal digital assistant, Milgrim was on the brink of answering, but then squinted through tears, recognising on the BlackBerry screen a very short specimen of the IF's family Volapük. The smell of Brown's glove retreated as Milgrim's mouth was uncovered. "I'm outside," Milgrim promptly translated. "Are you there? Signed A-L-E. Ale."
"That's all?
Nothing else there?" Milgrim's own fingertips massaged the hinges of his jaw. There were big nodes of nerve there. Paramedics use that on overdose victims. It got your attention.
10 after 2,
Brown said, looking at the screen of the BlackBerry.
"You know your bug works now," Milgrim offered. "You changed the batteries. Now there's proof it works."
Brown straightened and returned to his own room, without bothering to close the door. "You're welcome," thought Milgrim, as he lay back on the bed, eyes open, perhaps to reimagine the flagellant Messiah. The stolen Paul Stewart overcoat had contained, in its slash-flapped side pocket, a chunky 1961 paperback history of revolutionary messianism in medieval Europe. Owing to copious underlining in black fountain pen, this copy had most recently sold for $3.50, perhaps to the man from whom Milgrim had stolen the coat. The flagellant Messiah, as Milgrim imagined him, was a sort of brightly coloured Hieronymus Bosch action figure, moulded from some very superior grade of Japanese vinyl. Tightly hooded in yellow, the flagellant Messiah moved about a dun-coloured landscape, inhabited by other figures as well, all of them rendered in this same vinyl. Some of them were Bosch-influenced, say an enormous and ambulatory pair of bare buttocks, from between which protruded the wooden shaft of a large arrow. Others, like the flagellant Messiah, sprang from the stolen history, which he read every night, but after a rather circular fashion. He had never had any interest in this sort of thing before, that he could recall, but now he found it somehow comforting to have his dreams coloured this way. He saw the IF, for whatever reason, as a bird-headed Bosch creature, pursued by Brown and Brown's people, a brown hooded posse astride heraldic beasts that weren't quite horses, their swirling banners inscribed with slogans in the IF's Volapük. Sometimes they journeyed for days into the stylized groves bordering that landscape, glimpsing strange creatures in wooded shadow. At times, Brown and the flagellant Messiah would merge, so that Milgrim sometimes woke from dreams in which Brown tore his own flesh with whips whose barbs were coated with the same greyish green that covered his pistol, flashlight, and monocular. But this new Devonian sea, the blood-warm shallows in which these visions swam, belonged not to Atavan, but to Rise, a Japanese product for which Milgrim had immediately formed a firm respect. There were possibilities inherent in Rise, he sensed, that might only be revealed with further application. There was a sense of mobility that had been lacking recently, though he wondered if that had anything to do with the fact that he was being held captive. The advent of Rise, though, made it easier to get his head around that concept, captivity, and he was finding that it rankled. He hadn't been in a very good state at all when Brown had turned up, and someone with Atavan and orders had seemed like not such a bad idea. Indeed, Milgrim reminded himself, he might be dead now, were it not for Brown. Such were the possibilities of seizures, he knew, should he be withdrawn too quickly from medication. And sources, when one had no money, were problematic at best. But still, how long was one expected to live one's life in the tautly strung fug of Brown's curdled testosterone?
I could be disappeared, said a version of Milgrim's own voice, somewhere within some remaining citadel of self.
He might never have used the verb before, in that peculiarly Argentine sense, but now it applied, or could apply, easily enough. As far as his previous life went, such as it had gotten to be, he'd already been disappeared. Nobody knew where he was, other than his captor. Brown had taken his identification. Milgrim had no cash, no credit card, and he slept in rooms with greyish-green boxes on their doors to alert Brown should he attempt to leave. Most crucially, though, there was the matter of medication. Brown provided. Even if Milgrim were to manage to escape, he could only leave with at most a day's supply of functionality. Brown never provided more than that. He sighed, settling through the warmly rippling amniotic soup of his state. This was good. This was very good. If only he could take it with him.